we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are looking at the 18th episode of the classic 1960s series UFO.
Is that 18 UFO episodes or the 18th in production order?
It's the 18th one we've gotten to.
Wow. We've done 18 of these?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yep. Yep. So this episode is called The
Scarborough
Sound
Fair.
Sound of Silence. Yeah. Scarborough Fair.
Bridge and Over Troubled Waters.
Bridge Over Troubled... The Boxer.
Yeah.
It's The Boxer.
Well, there are some troubled waters in this episode.
There are some.
If you think about it, yes. It just needs a bridge.
Yes, a bit of a bridge. And a UFO closely follows a NASA space probe to Earth, preventing Shadow from destroying it. On Earth, Sky One flies over Russ and Anne, a brother and sister couple of steeplechasers in the English countryside, somewhere near where the UFO must have landed. Straker sends Foster and the Mobiles to investigate. Meanwhile, an alien spies on a hippie named Cully, who is squatting on Russ and Anne's land. Russ also spies Cully and chases him down on his horse, threatening to crush him. Russ is a hothead. That night, near the lake, Cully barely misses seeing a curious glow in the water. Later, Cully seems to get amorous designs on Anne, but instead he goes to visit her horse. Anne then investigates the strange noises that the horse is suddenly making. Cully watches her from the darkness. What does he intend? We don't find out because Russ shows up and the brother and sister leave together. Cully, still hiding in the shadows, suddenly dribbles blood from his mouth and dies. The next day, while riding near the lake, the horse gets upset and they notice there are no sounds of life. The alien watches them from the bushes. Later, back at the practice course, the alien spooks the horse and Russ is thrown. The alien approaches him. Anne and their father investigate when the horse returns riderless. All they find is Russ's hat. In the forest, Dad finds Cully's badly mutilated dog and calls the authorities. Straker intercepts the authorities and sends Foster in their place. Foster investigates the strangely silent lake. He has a hunch, but before he can check it out, Anne discovers Cully, badly mutilated. Foster brings in the Mobiles to surround the lake. The UFO must be in the water, or it would have disintegrated by now. They fire on the lake, causing the UFO to surface. They then destroy it. Something surfaces in the debris, which they take back to Shadow HQ and treat like a bomb. Inside, they detect a regular mechanical signal. They cut into it and discover Russ, packed for delivery to the alien planet. The doctors think they can revive him from his suspended state, but think having a familiar face around when they do it will be helpful. Foster brings Anne to Shadow to stand around pointlessly as they administer medicine to Russ. Then, before he fully revives, they administer the amnesia drug to them and they forget it all. Later, Foster then returns to their farm, where they no longer know him, presumably with amorous designs on Anne. Or is it her horse? Okay, how'd this episode grab you?
Not as well as I would have liked. I found it to be a bit rather confusing.
Nothing?
Isn't the word. It was kind of just empty.
Nothing?
Yeah, this is a nothing episode.
I'm not even sure there was a plot here.
Well, one of the things that really kind of baffled me, and this is something that we discussed when we were looking at the earlier episodes, is that this really wasn't, even though it's called UFO, this really wasn't so much of a series that was about UFOs and the aliens themselves. This was a series that was about Shadow. And the Shadow presence in this episode, while it is there, is very much relegated to the background. This is really about Russ, Anne, and Cully. And I mean, the alien is you only see him just a few times.
Does he look creepy in the bushes?
Well, of course he does, yes. But then so does Russ as he's stalking Anne in the stable For what purpose? I mean, there's a lot of these padded scenes here which make absolutely
no sense.
No sense whatsoever. They add nothing to the story. I mean, okay, I suppose they flesh out the characters a little bit, but not to the point where I really care about them. In fact, if anything, I find them now more annoying than ever.
Yeah, I mean, we go through some scenes that show that Russ is a hothead. There's even a sequence where Anne is at, because Anne doesn't live there anymore. She lives in the city and she's just visiting. And she's talking at dinner about how they should get somebody in to help out, because apparently their mom is dead or gone or whatever. And Dad says, yeah, we had somebody in from the village for a while. That lasted for a few days. And there's sort of like this knowing look around the family. It's like, yeah, because Russ is such a jerk to everybody, she wouldn't stay.
And yeah, why? Why are we given all of this needless exposition? It serves no purpose to the story at all.
It's just killing time. There really isn't a story here. I mean, this is really just sort of a scene out of their lives where somebody comes in and starts killing them.
It's a day in the life of Shadow. And actually more of a day in, well, yeah, I suppose you could call it a day in the life of Shadow, which happens to intersect with the life of Russ and Anne.
Which, but you know, I suppose that's the way it would really be. If, you know, if you were somewhere and an alien intercepted with you, you know, this would not be a proper story with a beginning, middle, and an end. It would be a short vignette where the alien comes in and kills you and or whatever to you, and then you end off. But it's not very satisfying in a dramatic presentation.
No, not in the slightest. I mean, I really don't know what else to really say about this. I mean, as I was just reviewing my notes here, I mean, I really just have it's just lots of nitpicky stuff because there's nothing really of any great substance that I can really jump on.
So let's ask a couple questions then. Why Russ? Why not Cully?
That's a great question. Why not? I mean, if it's all about body parts.
Yeah, parts is parts.
Exactly.
Or do they need somebody who's a hot-headed jerk wad?
Well, maybe the alien viewed Russ as being a better physical specimen.
Possible. I assume that means they can't take more than one.
Well, clearly that tube can only handle one. I mean, we don't know.
Too,
I mean,
but yeah.
I mean, yeah. Why not have more? I mean, yeah. That does not make any sense either. They had ample opportunity to take Russ. Apparently, there was ample opportunity to take Anne as well. And that wasn't done.
Mm-hmm. So, all around, I don't understand. And in the past, we have seen the aliens basically just cut you down with a machine gun and haul your corpse off.
Right.
And this time...
In this case, they just... All we see them do is... We see them stab, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Cully from the
back. We don't see what happened to Cully, yeah.
And we have no idea what happens to Russ. Well, Russ gets knocked down. He gets knocked off his horse. And mm-hmm. He's knocked unconscious. And the UFO alien just drags him away.
That's my impression on that. He just came and dragged him away.
And the other thing, one other thing that really bothered me, I'm like I said, I'm just simply jumping on anything that I can find that's even worth discussing. And that's not much.
Not much, yeah.
There's really not much in this story at all. It's the title. With The Sound of Silence... this was an episode I'd never seen. So I'm going into this thinking, okay, somehow silence is going to play a major part. Maybe maybe the aliens have devised some kind of
silence weapon.
Well, yeah, a silence weapon that completely silences all sound. And they can use that as some very clandestine means of attack. And all we really get is... Right by the shore of the lake where the alien ship is, where the UFO is hiding, Anne, first to Russ and then later to Paul. Listen, what? I don't hear anything. That's precisely it. There's nothing.
Okay, so let's just say the horses are obviously spooked. Okay, the dog is obviously spooked. So presumably the reason there's no sound is because the animals in the area have all been spooked.
They're all spooked and they've gone away.
So that part is ruined by the fact that they then decide to scare Paul Foster for a little moment of dramatic tension with a group of geese or ducks landing or taking off in the pond, which was probably a poor choice. But I'll tell you a funny story. Actually, I don't know that I can say honestly, truthfully say it's a funny story. But I can say in the context of us not having much to talk about on this episode, it's as funny a story as you're going to get.
Okay.
So I'm sitting here today watching this episode in preparation. And I'm here alone. And, you know, the kids aren't here and family isn't home yet. So I'm just sitting on the sofa and I'm watching this episode. And Anne is like, wait, listen. And Russ is like, what? I don't hear anything. Exactly. I don't hear anything. Not even the sound of birds. And I'm sitting here going, and there are just like birds chirping everywhere. And I'm sitting here going, boy, did the Foley guy really screw up on this? There are birds just like chirping away all over the place. And like,
where? Outside your house?
Turned out they were outside my house. Uh-huh. That's right. I had the front door open and it's spring. And I mean, the birds were just going, and I apparently can't tell the difference between the English and American accented birds, but it really was. I don't normally notice birds. So this was just sitting here listening to birds and all the animals rustling. I'm going, this is terrible. This is like awful. I am going to have so much fun picking on that during this episode. And then I had to pause it and like the birds didn't stop. Oh, I got it. It's springtime.
Oops.
It's as good as he got. It's as good as I got for a story on this one. So, I mean, I have a couple notes. I mean, the first off, you know, I asked, why didn't they take Cully? That's a strange
It's a good
one.
Question.
Yeah, I've got
I wish I
my
had
notes
a good answer,
are,
but I don't.
Well, my notes here is like, what was the point of this episode? Did we learn anything about the aliens? Did we
advance anything?
I mean,
now
we know they
series.
Take some of them back in cryogenic or some sort of mechanical suspension.
Well, we knew they did something.
Well, we thought they killed them before with machine guns and hauled them off for parts.
Well, we've seen them do that, too.
Actually, come to think of it, didn't they? No, they did take off. They did take all the dead bodies. They didn't just leave parts of them behind in the earlier episodes because they
exactly.
would have missing people. And then later they discovered the organs of some of the missing people in the dead aliens. So, so yeah, the people were missing, presumed dead.
Maybe the whole idea was to take Russ and actually, I don't know, convert him completely into a UFO alien. I don't know.
Interesting thought that the aliens might not be aliens, that they might be human people. But then in which case, what would be the point of needing to steal body parts when you would just rather take people?
Well, if you can, I mean, if it's easier to take people that are unspoiled, but if not, I mean, if you're just going for parts, then, you know, go for parts.
Did you recognize Russ?
I read his IMDb last night.
The Valyard.
Yeah, the Valyard.
Well, and also Nicholas III.
That I didn't remember him from, but yeah, I saw that and I went, oh, and I did not recognize him. But at the same time, however, there was something familiar, but I couldn't place him.
Okay, in the very beginning, like in the first scene you see him, he says, I don't know, they chase off or something like that, and he says, you cheated, and Anne says, no, I didn't, and he laughs, and his laugh is the Valyard's evil laugh. It's like, oh yeah, that's the Valyard.
It was funny because it was during the dinner scene in their house that I kept thinking there's just something in his face, something in the tone of his voice that sounds very familiar. And that's when I couldn't place him. The name didn't mean anything. So then I looked it up his credits in IMDb and, okay. I know who he is now.
Yeah. You see Michael Jason every once in a while in British stuff from the period. I had no clue that was him. And, I'd seen Nicholas and Alexandra in my history class of all things in high school. And of course I didn't know who he was, but it's a great performance, as the Tsar. And I watched it not too terribly long ago from Netflix. And when it came on, it was, you know, starring Michael Jason. I'm going, that's the Valyard? Wow.
Yeah.
Totally did not get that.
Well, I'll tell you someone who gives a really bad performance. I didn't look up her name, but it's the actress who plays Anne.
Yeah, not
her
very good.
Her acting is, it's dreadful. There's a horrible scene, and we've already covered it here, where Foster brings her to Shadow HQ.
Yeah, it seems
so that
like a
she can help.
Reason.
Yes, so she can help be there when Russ wakes up. And there's a very, very strange scene that I had to watch three times because it just felt very weird and I didn't know what was going on. And Russ appears to be coming to through camera trickery. We're seeing things through his eyes and
fisheye, yeah.
Yeah, through the fisheye lens, and he's clearly not entirely all there. And then there's a scene where there's a cut where Paul then picks up, you know, he gently grabs Anne and moves her over to a chair, and she has this completely expressionless look on her face just before they give her the retcon.
Without her making the slightest, like, why are you giving me this?
Or, I know. Like,
I'm here for my brother, and you're coming over with the needle and giving it to me.
What are you doing? Why are you moving me? Well, let me be my brother. Nothing. She was just completely emotionless, like she had already been drugged.
And I'm not sure that there's any logical reason that him just sort of seeing her face amongst the sea of all the others would really help him in this situation. You know?
Well, and my thought also at this point is, okay, if it's determined that Russ is going to pull through, and by that point I think it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Why not transport him to a nearby hospital, a public hospital? I mean, I'm sure you could have shadow staff.
Didn't have any dealing with people coming out of.
But you could easily have provide a doctor. You could, you know, Dr. Creepy or whatever his name is.
Jackson.
Yeah, Dr. Jackson. Have him go along.
Yes,
and be there. He'd scare the rest of the staff away. But have him be there, monitor Russ's condition, and then have Anne there. And then, you know, there's no need for any of this bizarre subterfuge involving.
They'd probably still retconning him over the dead people and stuff, just on
probably
general principles. And besides, this is apparently how Foster gets his dates.
Oh, that's it. He retcons the girls and then makes his move on them.
Afterwards, yeah, because he's already got, like, I already know stuff about her, so I can
now I have the upper hand.
Yeah, yeah. I do find that creepy. I mean, this is the second time he's done that.
Oh, yeah. It makes him out to be a real cad.
And, you know, it's hard to tell why he came to visit them. Was it to check up and make sure the retcon was working?
That was my thought. I mean, because he goes there stating that he wants riding lessons.
Uh-huh. Riding lessons. Nudge, wink, say no more.
Yeah. But I kind of get the feeling that the formal reason is, yeah, he wants to make sure the retcon has taken effect. That's the answer that he's given to Straker and possibly Alec, who we don't see in this episode
at all.
But I'm sure that underneath he's thinking, and I might be able to get a score or two while I'm at it.
Mm-hmm. It is the swinging 80s, so.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay. It's not caddish anymore. Yeah, I can't defend it, but I find a lot of things creepy in this episode. I mean, I really think that the guy they got playing the alien, in addition to being green and having the eyebrows, is a strange looking guy. As opposed to, let's say, the time when, the blind old lady hit the alien? They just sort of looked like a fat, kind of ordinary guy in green makeup, and he didn't really look alien per se. I think that's the one.
No, I don't think so. But I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah,
I know the one you're talking about, but I don't think that's him. Not the one with the blind lady. I think that was another gentleman.
Maybe it's the one who killed the night watchman.
Yeah, I think yes. That's the one you're thinking of.
Yeah. It's like this guy that they've got has a weird look to it.
Oh, it's menacing.
And his green shot in the green of the bushes. It's very well done. I mean, points to the director for those shots.
It is the best thing of this episode. Unfortunately, it's underutilized.
But then the director fails miserably because he has the scene where Cully is sitting there at the fire playing with his knife. I don't remember whether he's playing his knife or whether he's lying there trying to sleep. And they cut back and forth predominantly on him. So, you know, you'll see 2 or 3 seconds on him. And then you'll cut for about 1 second to Anne sleeping in her bed. And then you'll cut back to him. And it gives the impression that he's thinking of Anne in her bed.
Exactly.
And then he gets up and he's like, come on, dog, let's go. And off he goes. And you see him creeping outside the house. And again, cut to Anne sleeping in the bed a couple times. And then he's standing in the horse stall looking at the horse. And it's kind of It's like, okay.
Am I watching UFO or Equus? I mean, I don't know at this
really
point.
Really kind of weird. And the horse is all getting, you know, jittery. And, of course, we think the horse is jittery because Cully is there. But it's actually probably because the alien is there.
The alien is there, but this all works for Cully's benefit anyway, because he gets to leer at a very scantily dressed Anne.
You know, I totally did not notice that she was scantily dressed.
She was, yeah. She just put on a little nighty-type bathrobe that just didn't even go halfway down her thigh.
In UFO, nobody wears anything more than halfway down their thigh, do they?
I don't think so. Well, yeah. since she certainly wasn't.
So, you know, she's out there trying to calm the horse down. He's just watching her. It's like, what's he thinking?
Do I care?
Yeah. And is it, I could kind of see him maybe wanting to go do something to Russ, because Russ is the one who's a real jerk to him and kind of threatened to kill him. Well, did threaten to kill him.
Yeah.
Basically. So I could see how he might have some designs on him. And so maybe he's there to hurt his horse, which, since he's an international steeplechaser.
I don't know. Why were we getting this really weird cut of scenery back and forth between, you know, Cully off on the land and then Anne in her bed? I mean, then what's the purpose of that scenery? Because that really serves as some sort of a heavy suggestion,
right?
That he's going to be, you know, pursuing her,
right? And
but then again, why go into the barn? I mean, I don't know.
And there's a lot of the alien creeping around. Like, oh, there's Cully. He's all alone in the forest, and the dog's barking a bit, but he's telling the dog to shut up. And there's the alien, and you're thinking, Cully's done for.
Nope. Yeah.
I think that happens at least twice. Yeah, it does happen at least twice. There's once there, early, right before Russ chases him with a horse. And then there's again at the lake. And then finally the alien kills him at the barn and apparently mutilates him afterwards and takes him out and then drags the body somewhere and just leaves it. That didn't make much sense either.
No, but then a lot of things in this episode don't make much sense. I mean, I have to kind of wonder if the writer maybe wasn't operating on only 30 minutes of sleep when he wrote this, because there's just a lot of very ambiguous, unnecessary padding in this episode.
I mean, you've nailed it. I mean, I think everything that seems to be unnecessary, like the discussion about Russ being a hothead and running off the woman that was doing the cooking for them, I think all of that is just pure unadulterated padding. I think the whole sequence before the opening credits where they chase the UFO.
Yeah. I thought
that was a very long sequence for basically nothing other than
just to serve as a means to sneak in. I mean, I'm sure they could have come up with some other way that didn't involve Derek Meddings coming up with a nice little piece of the model work, and I always liked Derek's work. But as far as serving the story, it didn't. No. I mean, there's got to be other ways that we've seen many ways in the past where the UFO was able to duck past the defenses on Moonbase and make it over into Earth.
And this time they actually had it was coming in slow and they could follow it.
But not do a thing because it was too close.
They still didn't manage to shoot. Sky One didn't manage to shoot it down when it broke away from the American spacecraft. It eventually would have had to have done that.
Well, no,
I'm pretty
sure
that NASA craft did not land in the home counties.
No.
So,
and I don't know where it broke away. I mean, I'd like to think that the interceptors could operate a little bit in the outer atmosphere of Earth. I mean, at some point before it even enters the atmosphere, the UFO had to have broken away, and either Sky One or one of the interceptors could have done something then. Instead, when it looked like that it was going to at least follow this NASA capsule back to Earth, Stryker gives the order, okay, recall the interceptors. And I'm thinking, why? I mean, hey, you know, more than one ship can play this little tag game.
Yeah. I think everything here points, well, there's only one thing that doesn't, but everything here points to this being a padding episode. I mean, they just simply didn't have a story. I would have been much happier if it had in some way moved the mythos of the show along by much giving us some more information about the aliens or something.
Or like what Subsmash did. I mean, here was an episode that was actually kind of very low on the action quotient, but it really gave us a lot of information about the people and about Shadow itself.
But it wasn't a cheap episode because there were a lot of very nice location work. They had quite a bit of model work. I mean, they had the lake UFO and the mobiles running around and the space probe it's being. So it wasn't like they were, you know, let's put it on standing sets and...
No, it's got... The episode has some excellent production values. It just is completely devoid of any really good story.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing I have else was... We can obviously talk about anything you want, but the only thing that I have that I wanted to mention was I liked, and at the same time loathed, the drilling device that they used for cutting into what they thought was a bomb. They had a little tripod affair, and it had a hole saw on it. So if you, just for people who don't know, a hole saw is basically a drill bit that has a collar that is a saw blade. And it's what you would use, you see them most often, for drilling out the hole that you put a doorknob through. I mean, that's probably the most common thing you'll ever see a hole saw for. But they're very handy things, but they usually go in a power drill. But in this case, they had this hole saw in this tripod with a hand crank so that this guy could very, very carefully cut into this bomb because he doesn't want to detonate it. Yeah, he doesn't want to detonate the base. And I thought that was a really cool idea. You know, why it wouldn't be a low power electric device, I don't know. But
granted, when this episode was filmed, I mean, we're told it's 1980, but it's really 1960 something. So it was a very bad extrapolation.
I think it was just meant to be. You know, doing this by hand is the only way to be absolutely careful. But
it also slows down the story, and you can ratchet up the tension a little bit.
But here is the part that bugged me about this, because I like the idea. But here's the thing about a hole saw, because of the way they're made, you can't cut something deeper than the blade, because it is like a cup. The blade being at where you would drink from, and the part that normally would go into the drill being at the bottom of what you would call a cup. And so if you have a hole saw that you're cutting through a door to put in, it has to be deep enough to be as thick as a door.
Right.
Well, this hole saw wasn't that thick.
No.
And when he cut through that and said, okay, we're through, he lifted out a core sample that must have been six foot long.
Uh-huh.
Well, all right, it was 5 inches if it was
at least 3 times longer than
the hole saw.
Than the hole saw itself.
Impossible for that to have been the case. And that really did kind of screw it up for me, because you've been seeing him work that saw a lot, you know, one at a time.
And the cup doesn't make much dent.
Yeah, he'd have been cutting for a month to go through 5 inches of that metal. You know, at most, he cut through a half an inch with that hole saw. And then he pulls the hole saw off and he sits aside and he gets something in there, the little hole that they've also formed in the middle, because usually a hole saw has a drill bit in it as well to kind of get into the wood and then hold it straight. And so he puts something in there, and then he slowly extracts it, and he just keeps extracting and extracting and extracting.
Okay,
that's gone. This is ridiculous.
This is
now
a little silly. I mean, oh, wow, that saw's a heck of a lot more effective than I was led to believe.
It's obviously bigger on the inside.
On the outside.
On the outside of the saw.
It's a trans-dimensional tool.
That was the only other thing I had. I mean, the bit with the amnesia drug, just bringing them down and pumping them full of the amnesia drug, really pointless. Just killed some time.
I know. A lot of killing of time in here.
And I particularly liked how she's taken into Shadow headquarters, and she's like, well, what is all this? And Straker's answers, best not just to think about it. It'll be easier to forget.
It'll be easier to forget it later. I'm like, okay, we know what's happening to her.
And is it a true statement? Is the less they know, the easier it is for the retcon to work?
That's a good question.
Because they seem to forget a lot of time. And did they do Dad? Did they make Dad forget? Because they'd kind of have to.
Well, they need
otherwise,
to, yeah.
He'd know about Paul Foster.
Because they know nothing about, yeah, they would have to do Dad because he knew who Paul was. As far as Russ and Ann are concerned, they were never away.
Right.
So, but Dad knows that they were away. So, yeah, you have to do him as well.
And he knew about the dead dog.
Knew about Cully.
Well, he might have known about Cully. I'm not sure.
Well, he knew that Cully was there.
Oh, he knew he was there, yeah.
But I don't know if he knew about Cully being dead. But, yeah. I mean, you might as well just go the distance and take care of that little bit of detail as well, since Cully's now dead. I mean, there's just a lot of misfires on this entire story. Yeah. I kept thinking that this felt very, very strange as I was watching it. I mean, we're given an enormous amount of character development on Russ and Ann. And as I was watching, I kept thinking, well, maybe you have to do that because I guess there's some involvement with the UFO alien. Cully was utterly unnecessary. And I kind of get the feeling that he was there to either confuse or distract me, the viewer, from the threat that the alien might be trying to generate in the sake of the story. I mean, it was just very, very, very odd. And I felt like I watched nothing more than one enormous red herring.
Yeah, kind of just a big red herring.
And I kept thinking, given how the executives, how they were all complaining about, we don't want tea in the Midlands kind of thing. I bet when they took one look at this, they just pulled their hair out.
Yes, I'd agree. This is the most egregious example of that.
Because this is everything they didn't want.
Now, this did give us the opportunity to explore the notion that if a UFO could come to Earth and land in a lake, it'd be fine. Now, I know that I think when we were talking about Subsmash, I believe we had discussed that we thought we had already seen a UFO landing in a lake. But upon reflection, I think I think this was the first time.
Yeah.
And a good system. I mean, you think it's in the lake and you bring up the mobiles and you start firing some depth charges.
And it's nice to see I will admit that was actually kind of a nice scene. Clearly the mobiles, they have defensive capabilities and attack capabilities. I mean, I couldn't remember. I mean, aside from the depth charges they were throwing into the lake, I really don't remember any weapon capabilities that they've had in the past. I'm sure they must have had some, but I really didn't see it used to any sort of maximum benefit like we did in this one. So to see the three mobile units actually attack
and get nearly destroyed with machine guns. Let's face it.
Yeah,
they
machine
were
shooting
guns, machine
but they
guns
were they were doing this really weird panning thing. I mean, I would like to have thought that someone would have invented a good targeting system that was explained for the interceptors when they launched their missiles in an attempt to try to knock out a UFO. Well, I'd kind of like to think that they've got something very similar in their land mobile units as well, to help aim their machine guns.
I would think that if I was sending out mobile devices designed to destroy or engage UFOs, I would give them the same kind of weaponry that Sky One and the Interceptors have.
Well,
which is some sort of missile.
Do we see Sky One shoot any missiles?
It shoots small missiles from under its wing. Like tomahawks or something.
Okay, because I wasn't sure if it was like some sort of a rapid machine gun.
No, and I think the rapid machine gun was not very credible in destroying the UFO either.
Well, not in this particular case, no. I mean, and we don't know what kind of projectiles they were using.
And I think we lost two of the three or four mobiles
from laser blasts. I know we lost one. I didn't know if we lost two of them or I couldn't tell.
It's hard to tell the mobiles apart sometimes. So it may have been the
same.
Yeah,
they all look alike.
Exactly.
But it was still nice to see at least that there's some kind of strategy that can be employed to try to take the UFO out. So I liked that. But it's such a minor part in the overall episode that it doesn't redeem it in the slightest.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts on this? I mean,
Poor acting and overly developed characters really, really helped to just completely hamper what little bit of story there was here. I mean, Shadow had little, if anything, to do here. And as I said earlier, I could really see how some certain TV executives really would have complained at the minimal, almost non-existent action that was presented in this episode. I mean, it's a distraction. That's all it is.
And my thought is, just to tell people, is if you're watching this episode, don't watch it with the door open during the spring when there's birds chirping outside.
Because it'll ruin the only important scene in the
scene that defines the title, which is the essence of this episode. Exactly. So I think next time when we're back to talking about UFO again, I think we're talking about the episode called The Cat with 10 Lives.
Oh, now that one I did see a very long time ago. So I'm curious to see that one again just for refamiliarization and to see if it holds up.
So, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
And listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol, or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.